This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with John Everest, and I'm really looking forward to talking with you about your soundtrack for Battletech. So thank you so much for being on the program.
Yeah, you're very welcome. It's awesome to be here. Big fan.
Your music for Battletech, honestly, it just blew me away because it wasn't what I was expecting at all with this, you know, real-time strategy, gigantic metal warrior clashes on the battlefield, because your music has so much heart and so much humanity. And the series itself has been running for a long, long time, over 30 years. And so I'm wondering, how far back does your history with Battletech go?
Yeah, well, first, thank you. I really appreciate that. I tried to take, my own path with the music for Battletech, and yeah, like you said, it's a franchise that has so much history already with it. So I, you know, kind of feel the weight of that history on my shoulders as I'm, you know, taking the torch for the stories that they're telling today. But actually, as a kid, I did go to a Battletech center when I was pretty young, which was an awesome experience for a young kid to do, which is really, it was kind of the first VR centers that they had back in the early 90s. You actually got to get up in a huge cockpit of a mech and, you know, walk around and shoot other mechs and stuff. And then I think one of the first PC games that I ever played was MechWarrior 2, but I never got deep into the lore and the history that surrounded Battletech. I'm not sure if it was just because I was a little too young or got distracted by other games, Super Nintendo and stuff like that, which is, I didn't have a good PC growing up. But I in a way, that kind of insulated me from what came before, in a sense. And so I was approaching the series or the franchise with a really fresh perspective, but still with this, you know, intense love for those memories of me in the cockpit in that VR center and playing MechWarrior 2.
That must have given you all kinds of, I don't know, just sort of an easy to put yourself in the place of these incredible characters that get inside these mech warriors. Because I think what's so interesting, the story itself is kind of timeless, honestly. There's betrayal and heroism and revenge and redemption, all set with these incredible machines, and yet there are people inside the machines. So as you were working out what the music was going to be with Harebrained Schemes, the developers, what sort of things were going through your mind?
I get really lucky to, you know, I'm very lucky to work with Harebrained Schemes and their writing team. Andrew McIntosh in particular, are just, you know, they really focus on the story and the characters first and foremost when they're building these worlds for all their games, really. They did this for Shadowrun Hong Kong as well. So when I approach the game, I really start with the characters. I start with the story, and you know, it could be just a basic overview and some concept art and whatnot. But you know, that's who I'm writing the score for. I'm writing the score for these characters who are you know, like you said, it's these universal stories, these struggles, these human stories, regardless of the backdrop, whether it's, you know, giant robots or, you know, in a dystopian future like Shadowrun Hong Kong. I think the timelessness of the struggles of these characters is really what I like to key off of.
Thank you.
it's really easy with the quality of writing that they have at Harebrained Schemes. So with that, I've been extremely lucky, because as a composer, when you're getting these very in-depth and timeless stories told about characters, it makes the writing process quite a bit easier.
Yeah, I was really, really impressed with the writing in the cutscenes and in the combat too. And since you've done music for them before, the Shadowrun games, were you kind of the obvious choice, or did you have to like send a demo?
You know, it's funny because I knew they always wanted to do Battletech, even when I was doing the Shadowrun games. Jordan Weissman, the studio head of Harebrained Schemes, the founder, he actually is the creator of Battletech, the original incarnation of the Battletech universe. I kind of knew that they wanted to go in that direction. So I just really tried, you know, I kind of won the lottery as a composer in terms of getting on board with Harebrained Schemes pretty early, and was just delivering stuff that they seemed to like, and I was delivering it on time, you know. So I think as long as you're doing that at a studio, you're usually going to be the first one that they go to, because, you know, finding another composers can be pretty difficult. But yeah, I mean, I'd like to think that if I was, you know, not fitting the mold for what the Battletech universe needed, that I would have been duly replaced. But luckily, you know, the writing direction that I took the franchise at the beginning, you know, I wrote one of the first songs for Battletech was a track called Coronation Day. And it was really I wanted to kind of put my stamp immediately down and say, okay, I'm not going to take the franchise in a direction that maybe some people might expect, where it's, you know, chugging guitars and heavy electronics and stuff, that I was going to try to move in a more nuanced cinematic direction, where it was kind of treating the story as if it was a miniseries on HBO or something like that.
Thank you.
not to say that there's not, you know, stomping electronics in the score, because there definitely is, but...
And we'll get to that.
Yeah, I definitely just, you know, I wanted to treat it as almost like a two sides to one coin. So one side is this huge, ever-evolving story of political intrigue where there's a, you know, the deposed rightful heir to the throne is trying to struggle to reclaim her dominance in this area of the galaxy. And then the other side is your crew is just a mercenary group of people who are just trying to, like, you know, take on contracts and survive to pay their bills every month. And so, you know, that other side is a little more gritty. And then the, you know, the political main storyline has these elements that maybe are unexpected in a game that is about giant mechs punching each other.
Yeah, and that's where the cutscenes come in, I think, because, well, right off the bat, that coronation scene is basically what gets the whole story going, because as a mech warrior, you are supposed to escort the High Lady Kamea Arano to her coronation, but the whole thing ends with a coup, and she disappears, and so that's kind of what gets things going. So it is very dramatic, and did you have a chance to see the cinematic before you wrote the music, or did the music kind of drive the cinematic?
Yeah, it's an interesting process, I think, for BattleTech. It's not I think, a common practice in games, just because of how games are made, but a lot of the cinematics were kind of pieced together after music had already been written to a certain extent. Some obviously were the other way around, but we got kind of lucky to where I was writing songs based on the story and, you know, writing them in a cinematic way where I was imagining in my head or through, you know, just the story itself, what was going to be playing out for these tracks. And then, you know, later in, we brought in the artists and the motion graphics and kind of told the story and edited it to the music itself. So that was kind of a unique way to approach the cinematics, but in another way, it did kind of add this sort of storytelling element where music is influencing the art just as much as the art is influencing the music, so to speak. And it was a lot of fun to do it that way. And I haven't done it that way in the past for other games either.
I haven't heard of any other composer that has been able to do it that way, because more often than not, the composer is handed a finished cutscene and is asked to score it. So I think it's a great place to be and really a great way to work. And it sounds like a real partnership with the devs at Harebrained Schemes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's I like to say I got very lucky getting my first gig with Harebrained Schemes and then getting a chance to work on all these games with them. But yeah, it's part of that developing a, you know, relationship where you kind of know how each other work, and you know, we're not AAA, so we're not bound by strict timelines and deliverables that need to go through an exhaustive process of getting signed off and whatnot. We're kind of a scrappy group of people that, you know, we can change things on the fly and we can borrow ideas from other disciplines and have each other kind of influence the final outcome. And I think in the cinematics for BattleTech, that really shows through, not just for the music and art, but for the sound design also, and the way that the story was kind of also constantly kind of in flux, changing certain things here and there. So yeah, being agile like that is difficult. It's not to say that it was an easy way to work, but when you're kind of on a smaller, scrappier budget, I think, you know, you can take those risks, and I think it paid off in this case.
Yeah, definitely. And yet, it really sounds like you made absolutely the most of your music budget. It sounds like the soundtrack from a AAA game. And how did you make the most of your budget? Because you worked with a couple different orchestras and some soloists and a chorus. And so what was the process of getting all of that lined up?
I worked on the game for about 2.5 years, and I always knew the budget was relatively small, but I knew that I wanted to definitely record a certain portion of it live. And yeah, as far as making the budget go as far as possible, I knew we wanted to record some of the major themes with full orchestra. So I kind of had to plan that out from the beginning. And we ended up working with a full orchestra in Budapest, Hungary. Fantastic Budapest scoring orchestra there. And then we also recorded a few themes in Germany, in Frankfurt Oder there. And we did a 24-piece choir in Latvia, and I did that one remotely. So I had these pillars of the live sections of the score that I knew I wanted to put certain major themes into. But then also working with our solo cellist, Erika Kadi, who lives in Budapest as well, and doing string section recordings in Budapest, I knew that I could take these kind of more isolated pieces of music and use them in interesting ways throughout the soundtrack. So whether it's splitting up a solo cello theme into different parts and repurposing that into completely different pieces of music, or taking the isolated string sections and doing the same thing, or splitting them up for interactivity when I implement, so that kind of one song is ending up branching off and becoming several different songs, so to speak. And then also it's just, you know, for me, it's mixing the live stuff with the digital mock-ups and the analog synths, and trying to bridge that gap of moving in and out of live recordings and into the in-the-box recordings, and making that sound as convincing as possible.
Yeah, you convinced me. I mean, it's just the whole wash of sound is just absolutely beautiful. And I do want to talk with you about how you worked in the synths as well. And there are some really, really beautiful cues where the blend of synth and acoustic music is just really fantastic. One in particular, The Vast Expanse, I think, is just a wonderful example of how you were able to blend the two. And that's one of the cues where you're just flying in your ship, right?
Right, yeah. So that's a track that I wrote relatively late in the project, and knowing that the player, when they play the game and they're on their ship and they're traveling around the galaxy, they're spending a whole bunch of time doing this, you know, whether it's traveling from star system to the next, or just like, you know, reviewing how much money they have left and what their crew is up to and what new parts of the ship they're building. So it's a long looping track, but it also has different stems in it that are interactive, so they can kind of change and randomize depending on what's going on in the game. And for me, I wanted that track to have some live aspect to it, but the actual result is it's an all digital track. So there's actually no live instruments in that one, but it does mix the sound of a live small string section and solo violinist and my analog modular synths. And to me, the modular synth really lends itself well to mixing with strings. And I'm not sure exactly why that is, but there's a physicality of modular synthesis and sort of a messiness of it, where you're not really getting a perfect sound ever. And you're getting a sound that, you know, you'll never be able to fully recreate again. And, you know, it's not in time. It's not always perfectly in tune. For some reason, that just, it breathes life into the digital parts of the tracks for me. So doing that little, really simple arpeggiation in the modular synth, and then adding these kind of lush string elements and a little bit of solo violin there, just to me, that felt, it had that feeling of embracing you in your, you know, you're in your ship, you're at home, you're safe. It's kind of that warm embrace of being done with the mission, being back and kind of taking care of your people and moving on to the next mission.
Thank you.
the pacing of the game, I think, is really so well done, because in these sort of interstitial, really intense combat sequences, and then of course the emotional cutscenes, you do get a chance to just kind of catch your breath. And you mentioned also that Mercenary Blues, again, gives the player a chance to just kind of unwind and just take a moment to relax. And I think what that does, those moments, is that it really makes the combat music have even more impact.
That was definitely on my mind a lot for a game like this, is you don't want to always be barraged with the auditory overload that you get in missions sometimes when you're, firing hundreds of missiles and all the explosions and stompiness that's happening. I wanted the moments when you're back in your ship and you're managing this group of people that you've hired on to come on this mission with you, that things feel small, that you feel the smallness and the human aspect of the game, that regardless of what you're doing on the battlefield, the people are human and they are experiencing human struggles, and I wanted to try to be empathetic of that.
Thank you. I think empathy, that is such a key word for the music that you've created, just right straight through, if there was like one feeling that the music has, because these characters, because of the writing, the characters are really, really sympathetic. And there's one cutscene in particular that really got to me, the scene where you discover that Raju, your mentor, has been imprisoned. He'd been imprisoned the whole time you were looking for him, and you finally find that out. And that music is really heartbreaking. So as you were approaching it, I mean, did you already know what the storyline was going to be for that, so that you could really help with the emotion of that cutscene?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I really appreciate you saying that. The empathy part is, it's kind of, I at least try to start with empathy as my main objective as a composer. Is, you know, I hope not to hit somebody over the head with, this is how you're supposed to feel at this current moment, but I want them to put themselves in the character's shoes as much as possible. But yeah, that moment with Raju was a really tragic piece of the story that I really latched onto from the beginning. And so, you know, I wrote several pieces about Raju and about Kamea and their relationship with each other and your relationship with Raju himself, because he plays a part in your backstory. And a lot of the emotion is from that. And it's a tragic story. It really is. It's a timeless, tragic kind of war story. And I just imagine that moment of realizing that, you know, someone who had essentially raised you and made you, you know, the person you are today was suffering for so long without you knowing. Those sort of storytelling moments that make the music just kind of flow out, you know, it makes it a lot easier to write when you have these story beats ahead of time.
I love telling people who, you know, don't necessarily play games and they're not really familiar with the emotional range that games cover these days. You point to something like that and it can have as much impact as a really dramatic moment in a film or TV or a play, honestly. And I think it's just really important for people to be aware of how emotional and how emotionally involved you can get with a game these days. So having an opportunity to work on a game like this with so much emotion in the story and so many big themes, just like you said, I mean, it must have been just like the dream job.
It absolutely was. I think studios like Harebrained Schemes are, you know, slowly becoming more prevalent, and indie studios all the way up to AAA studios are telling these stories that, like you said, are on level with the emotional maturity as of movies or stage plays or any great story. I mean, so it's an exciting time for games and to be a composer for games, because there's just so many stories that are worth telling in an interactive environment. And investing yourself into games where you're playing and you're a part of the story can make those moments even more impactful for players, rather than if you're, you know, watching it in a movie or a play.
Oh yeah, definitely. Because a lot of that, you know, it's on you. You made that choice and now you have to live with it, or at least your character and the world of the game has to live with it. So it does definitely have a lot more, you know, personal agency, I think. You know, I've heard from so many game composers that one of the things they love about working for games is being able to have the freedom to create their own instruments. I mean, even beyond all the samples and all the acoustic instruments that, that they use. And you did that too. And I'd love to know a little bit about the instrument that you call it the Franken violin, because in the video that I saw, it looks like it's sort of strapped to an operating table and you're getting some really amazing sounds out of it. So but first of all, how did you get the idea to build it?
I had the idea to build my own instrument pretty early in the process. I'd seen, you know, a lot of composers kind of do the same thing. I think Jason Graves did something for Tomb Raider. And I just, you know, it's just like such a cool, first of all, it's just fun, right? I mean, making your own instrument for a project is a dream opportunity to do. But with BattleTech in particular, there's this whole kind of aspect of the game where you're making do with very little. You're barely scrapping by. You're reusing equipment in ways that shouldn't be used or may not be safe, or fighting on the battlefield and you're losing an arm on a mech that you need to replace with scrap that you pick up while you're out on missions. And so in that aspect, I just thought, you know, I need to make something that reflects this scrappiness that BattleTech has, this sort of gritty scrappiness. So really, I just went to a like Home Depot and picked up a bunch of random things that I could, you know, either hit with mallets or scrape with a bow. And so I have a huge container of just, you know, found sound, sound design stuff that I would make percussion instruments out of. And then I had the idea to do the Franken violin or the Franken string instrument by Mark Corvin. He's a film composer. He does a lot of horror films and whatnot. So yeah, so Mark Corvin, I saw this video of him a while back where he had this instrument made for a horror movie that he was working on. It was really just, you know, a box, like many instruments are, I guess, but it was a box with guitar electronics installed and some mics that are inside of the box itself, and then just various kind of noise-making objects attached to it. And so I took that and kind of ran with it a little bit and ended up attaching guitar strings and guitar pickups and mics on the inside. And then kind of like there's a few like saw elements to it where you can actually, it's a street sign that I attached to the side that you can bow or hit with a mallet. And then I found a old, you know, $60 violin that I was thinking I would somehow try to mic the violin in an interesting way, but it ended up where I just actually glued it to the side of the box, because I found when I attached it to the box and I would hit it or bow it in a pretty non-musical way, but it would make this really interesting reverberation that would go through the box and into other elements, the strings and whatnot, and cause this interesting resonance. So yeah, I just put that together and I started laying it over tracks and adding it as into the ambience in particular for missions. And it's not something that I think you can really notice all that much, which I think is probably for the best, because it doesn't make a lot of pretty sounds, but it does adds this like air to tracks that can make a digital mock-up, first of all, sound more live than I think it would without it. And then for things like the ambience for tracks and missions, especially bowing the guitar and using the magnetic resonator on the strings, the e-bow, it just doesn't sound like anything that I've heard before. And so I think combining all this stuff together into this noise machine added a little bit of that scrappiness to the soundtrack, where it sounds a little dirtier or a little grittier than it would without it. So I used a lot of that for percussion, just adding to digital percussion, and then adding a lot of sort of ambient swells and interesting weird noises.
Yeah, there's a cue, Vox Nihili, that I just loved it, like jumped out at me because you've got some really amazing sounds in there. Maybe not 100% the Frankenstring, but there's a lot going on in that one. And now I'm sort of picturing your studio as like the island of misfit toys, kind of with all these strange little things sitting around. But that cue in particular was really incredible.
Yeah, so that one in particular has a lot of the Frankenstring in it, and a lot of it processed. A lot of it is the output from the Frankenstring is running through guitar pedals and different processing tools here. So that's definitely a good example of where that was used just to kind of create a vibe that I don't think I could capture very well with samples.
Well, altogether, it's about a 50-hour game, and your soundtrack alone is just massive. It's 3 hours. It's available on Bandcamp, by the way. But how much music did you actually write for the game?
I think there's probably about 4 hours of music. When I was doing the soundtrack, I had to whittle it down a little bit. I was actually, at the end of the project, you feel like you just got out of a hurricane or something, and I didn't even realize I had written that much music until I accounted for it at the end, and was quite surprised that much music was written. But we've been working on it for a long time, and the game, as things were going well, the game kind of expanded more and more, and the story got more fleshed out and whatnot. So I think all in all it was about 4 hours, and all of that is, the vast majority of it is interactive too. So there's probably more than 10,000 stems in Wise that I had to wrangle and implement and make sure they were working correctly. So it was a large job for sure.
Yeah, I'll bet probably it's just as well you didn't know how big it was going to be when you took it on.
Right? I know. Yes.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about is the singer Emily Ridgway, the vocal soloist. She has got just such an incredible voice, and you can really hear that in one of the early tracks in the soundtrack, The Past as Prologue. Did you write for her voice specifically?
I did, yeah. I've got really lucky. We had a mutual friend, and she does a lot of work with the Seattle Symphony Chorale, here, our local symphony in Seattle. And she had reached out just, saying she was interested in doing some recording for games, and because she's, she'd been a fan of games herself for a long time. And so she reached out, I think it was a few months before BattleTech started, and I was like, yeah, definitely interested to see, if we could possibly work together. And then I heard a track from hers, and she's got this amazing register that kind of mezzo-soprano. She can go very low, but also soar quite high as well. And once I heard that, I was like, this is, it's kind of the perfect voice for this sort of story that we're telling. And so I thought it was appropriate doing that in the character creation, including her voice there, as you're kind of molding your story and you're hearing where you came from, what your past was like, and you hear Emily kind of belting out some disjointed Latin stuff that I wrote for her, heavily kind of reverbed and whatnot. It was a moment where I was like, oh, this is gonna sound pretty good.
And it does. It's really fabulous. And you know, speaking of Latin, you know, you gave the chorus a workout too, because they're singing in Latin in "Who Will Watch the Watchers?" Because that's a really intense moment when you bring down a ship, like a whole entire ship. What is your background with writing choral music? Because it sounds really believable and really authentic.
I don't really have a strong background in choral music. I kind of joked with Will Roget, who is another Seattle composer who did Call of Duty recently, amazing score. He was writing some Latin and was you know, I think just harping on how annoying it was to get the Latin correct. And I just told him, just add an I to your words and you'll be fine. It'll be good enoughy. And so I don't, you know, I try to do it as much justice as I can, but I'm not a choral writer by any means. So, and that was particularly hard to record too. I did that one remotely with members of the Latvian Radio Choir, which is a really fantastic group of singers. And those corners that you cut or not realizing, you know, certain phrases may be difficult to sing, or the consonants and the sibilance doesn't kind of lend itself well to the writing. I think there's a lot of like hard K's and S's in there, but you know, I kind of learn as you go. And I think it turned out, you know, it turned out okay, but definitely was one of those moments where I was like, oh, maybe I should, you know, take a little more time to write Latin phrases that are easier to sing.
Did you translate it from English and just kind of hope that the Latin would be a pretty good approximation, or did you write it in Latin first?
So I remember this, I think it's a Star Trek episode called Who Watches the Watchers. And that particular phrase comes from the Roman, is he a philosopher, Juvenal? I think he's a philosopher.
We'll say yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, it was already there. So like, you just have to look, I looked up the source of that phrase, who will watch the watchers, or who watches the watchers. And you can actually see the correct Latin translation from the satires of Juvenal. And so I just took that. Lots of T's, lots of S's. So, and especially there was a high soprano part to that that I was not expecting would be so difficult. And they really worked super hard to get it right, the high line. And we ended up having to turn it down quite a bit because of, you know, how loud they were getting when they were reaching those higher notes. But they were all kind of remarking how difficult it was, but they were also really excited to get it right. So that was fun to see.
Well, the end result, I mean, whatever their struggles might have been, the end result is really just so fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
And you mentioned when we were sort of chatting back and forth before the interview started that you've got a new project in the works. Is that something you can talk about now?
Yeah, so I got super lucky, and there's a local studio here in Redmond, Washington, that was started by Marcus Leto, who is the co-creator of the Halo franchise. He worked with Bungie for many years, and he just started his own studio recently called V1 Interactive. And they hired me on as their composer for the project. It's a super exciting project. It's a first-person shooter made in Unreal, and we'll definitely be talking a lot more about it. I'm super excited about this one. It's a big project and a lot of really, really talented folks coming together to make a pretty sweet game.
Oh boy, I can't wait to hear what you do with that. It sounds really amazing. John, how can people find you, like on social media and on your website?
People can find me on Twitter at John Everist, J-O-N-E-V-E-R-I-S-T. and my website, johneverest.com, and you know all the BattleTech soundtrack is on Spotify, so check it out.
Fantastic. Well, yeah, it's been so much fun to talk with you about it, because again, the soundtrack just really blew me away. So thank you so much for your time. It's really been fun.
Yeah, thanks so much, Kate. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.